Now we pick up in the sixth chapter of Micah, just three short verses. With what shall I come before the Lord and bow myself before God on high? Shall I come before him with burnt offerings, with calves a year old? Will the Lord be pleased with thousands of rams, with 10,000s of rivers of oil? Shall I give my firstborn for my transgression, the fruit of my body for the sin of my soul? He has told you, O mortal, what is good, and what does the Lord require of you but to do justice and love kindness and to walk humbly with your God? Friends, this is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Christ the King Sunday is kind of this oddball Sunday on the American church calendar. It almost always is either the Sunday before or the Sunday after Thanksgiving. And so you've got people missing because they're going places or because they have people coming in and the thing they can cut out of their schedule is an hour on Sunday morning. And it's not really like that big a deal. Like Advent, people think is really Christmas, so people get all revved up for that. Plus, Kroger's had Christmas in the aisles since like November 1st. So it kind of sits in this weird place. It's the last Sunday of the year, but it's not really like New Year's Eve, like it's worth its own party. And we really don't know what to do with kings. And then jumbling all the lectionary passages led me to these three Micah passages for today, which are almost Christmas because they got that little Bethlehem thing going on. And so what do we do with this? What do we do with this odd Sunday when a bunch of the people we expect to see in church aren't here, when we're mostly still hungover on turkey and stuffing and cranberries? And when three of you at least are already planning where things should be going when we decorate the sanctuary. Yeah, probably more than three. Probably. The thing that got me has been this kind of thread that's been running through our adult Sunday school class for the last year or more. Is that God just doesn't do things the way we do things. So this is Christ the King Sunday, and we have all these passages about a God who shows up and comes down and deals with us personally. Kings don't do that. They send people to do that. They're not going to deal with us lower-level serfs and peasants and things like that. That first passage in Micah talks about a God who leaves God's place. And when it does, all heck breaks loose. Mountains melt like water. There is trouble to be paid for. Then we move on, and we get forward to Micah, and we get that passage that makes you want to sing, O Little Town of Bethlehem. Kings don't come from the middle of nowhere. Kings are born in palaces. If you follow Jeff on Facebook, you know exactly when the royal family gets pregnant every time they get pregnant. Right? Princes and kings aren't born in obscurity. They're born under the lights and sound and fury of the daily tabloids and things. Certainly not in Bethlehem. And if you remember way back in the book of Samuel, when the people first come to Samuel to say to God, we want a king. Samuel goes off, he pulls out his soapbox and he just goes off. You know, a king is going to take all your property, all your kids. He's going to wage wars. He's going to cause death. He's going to take your daughters. He's going to kill your sons. He's going to take your crops. He's going to take your land. He's going to take your houses. He's going to tax you exorbitantly. And then in Micah 6, we get, do you honestly think that even 10,000 rams are enough of a sacrifice for God? God just doesn't do things the way we do them. Now, we can have a long debate over whether God should do things the way we think they should be done. And if you've ever shared a cup of coffee or something over at the Hardee's or Pulley's or KB's or any one of the other assorted gathering places in town, you know that there are people that are convinced that if God did things the way they did them, the world would be run much more smoothly. Isn't it perhaps instead good news that God doesn't do it the way we do it? We've been reading through the genealogy of Abraham's family in Sunday school. That is one messed up family. If you ever need to feel better about your family, read the history of the family that God chooses to work with in Genesis. It should make you feel better. And we've been reading about Jacob, that trickster, and this week was Laban, and they are both doing whatever they can to get more stuff and to put the other one in his place. I confess this morning that I do get a little gleeful when Laban tricks Jacob into marrying Leah first. I get a little gleeful that he gets some of his own. But it's not really about how many sheep or goats we accumulate, is it? Jacob, over the course of his life, starts off grabbing his brother's heel, taking his brother's birthright and blessing, getting run out of town on a rail, getting conned into marrying the daughter he doesn't want to marry. And it's a really fascinating piece of text by the biblical writer. They get married, they go into the tent, and the next phrase is, "And it was Leah," when he thought it was going to be Rachel. The biblical writer had a bit of fun with that as well. He struggles, married to two women, one of whom he clearly loves much more than the other. He has a child. His beloved wife finally has a child. They leave Laban after having conned Laban through early Mendelian genetics in a way to build up a flock. And he wants to go home, but he wants to go home, and the problem is the guy who's at home is the brother who basically ran him out of town with a shotgun. That's where he wants to go back to. And so he camps. He's already sent bribes, because let's not pretend they're gifts, they're bribes, on ahead to Esau, and he's got his family hanging out off to the side. And he spends a night, and that's where Jacob wrestles with the angel and becomes Israel. And you hear the echoes of that part of the story at the very beginning of Micah today. The sins of Jacob, the sins of Israel that are being paid for. And he has to cross the river. That's a metaphor we get a lot, an experience we get a lot in the Bible, isn't it? And he sort of makes peace with Esau. I'm not sure it's ever fully repaired. But then he's got these kids. He's got 12 boys, and we don't know how many girls, because the Bible writers don't think that the girls are that important. And it's just one big happy family, like the Partridge family, right? Or the Brady Bunch. Well, 10 of the brothers don't like brother number 11. Brother number 12 is the baby. Brothers 1 through 10 decide to kill brother 11. And they end up just selling him into slavery in Egypt. Can you imagine having to live in that household? You're Jacob. The son by your beloved wife is dead. You're not quite sure, but something smells hinky. But the 10 sons from your other wife swear that nothing bad happened. They weren't at fault. It wasn't their fault. There's this wild animal. And they've bullied son number 12 into going along with the story. You want to go home to that? And then Jacob and his family eventually move to Egypt, and that sets up the rest of this really long narrative about the people of God. And it brings us to Micah, where this promise is that things are going to be different. They've dealt with kings, they've dealt with Pharaoh, they dealt with prophets and judges. What they have not ever dealt with, honestly dealt with, is a God who is their king and who lives among them. And it's going to be different. It's going to be very different. We know, because we've cheated and we've read ahead from Micah, we know that what they get is not the king they're looking for, right? They get an infant who is almost killed by another king, an infant who himself has to be carried into Egypt and brought back into the land. They get a carpenter's kid from Nazareth, of all places. God doesn't do it our way. Right? I mean, this is not how you write a great story. If you're going to have somebody come out of poverty, it needs to be because, like, they were orphaned, but then they find out their lineage. It needs to be like the Arthurian legend with King Arthur, you know, that the king is really placed here, and there's this sword and this stone, and it's impossible for any. But then it's impossible to refute that he's the king. Even at the end of Jesus' life, people don't want to admit he's the king. He's in Pilate's house, and Pilate says, "Are you the king of the Jews?" He's on the cross, and Pilate has put the sign that says, "Jesus of Nazareth, King of the Jews," over his head. And the scribes and the elders want to say, "Ah! Don't say that. Put air quotes around it. He said he was king of the Jews." God really doesn't do things our way. And so when we go looking for Christ the King and pomp and circumstance and hail to the chief, and crowns and fancy robes, that's how we do it. And perhaps that's why we miss how God does it, is because we're looking for the wrong thing. It happens every so often. One of you asks me a question, and I think I have a book about that on the shelves in my office. Which is a fairly safe bet, because I have a lot of books on the shelves in my office. But I go in there and I think, I know exactly what that book looks like. I can see the cover in my head, right? And I start going across the shelves, and it's not there. Because I'm looking for a book that's got a blue binding with white at the top with black type. And when I eventually find it, it's a black book. Maybe we're looking for the wrong kind of king, but we've got it so fixed in our brain that we skim over it 1,000 times, even when it's right in front of us. It's not a king that just does business as usual. Micah predicts a God who will come down and be king and melt the mountains. It's not from the palace. It's from you, O Bethlehem of Ephratah, who are one of the little tribes of Israel. From you shall come. And it's not about the wealth that's piled up. It's not about 10,000 rams or gallons of oil. What does the Lord require of you but to do justice, love kindness, and walk humbly with your God? As we move into this Advent season, as we tell this story that we know oh so well, I'd ask you to consider, if we don't know it too well and we're looking for the wrong book on our shelves, look with new eyes, read the titles, and look for the child who is coming. To God alone be the glory this day and forevermore. Amen.